Hello and welcome to the BBC Inside Business podcast. Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Wendy Austin. 2018 is the year of infrastructure. Everything from Omo Community Hospital to the A6 dualling scheme, from the sewage works currently going on under the streets of Belfast to the works above ground for Translink's new glider. Despite no political backing, is it all happening? We'll find out on Inside Business today. It's hard to imagine life without clean water, energy networks, the internet, schools, offices, parks, hospitals, railways, waste collection, ports, airports, roads and bridges. It's all infrastructure and it has a massive impact on and input into our daily lives. We're now halfway through this year of infrastructure in Northern Ireland, so let's talk about it with Ronan Larkin. He's Director of Finance and Regulation at Northern Ireland Water. Dawson McConkie's partner with Carson McDowell's. Gareth McLaverty's Contracts Manager with Graham Farron's joint venture, and Richard Kirk's regional director of the Institution of Civil Engineers. Richard, it's been very much your baby. How's it gone so far?
It's great to see it all come together, Wendy. And this is also the 200th anniversary of ICE, which started in a coffee shop in London. And today we want to really just show people in Northern Ireland what infrastructure does for their lives and the work that civil engineers do to make that happen. Not so much what it is. The likes of the roads projects that we talked about are all about connecting people and opportunities, helping people get to work quicker or maybe get home quicker as well. So it's what those things do for our lives rather than what they are in particular.
I mean, you've made it very clear all along that there's a sort of messianic quality to this, if you like. You know, you want people to understand what it does for them. Are you getting there?
Well, the impact of the campaign will be something that we'll look at the end of the year, but certainly the profile that we've been able to have, particularly on social media, where so much of culture can be shaped these days, has been really, really good. And we're even seeing some of the organisations that we're working with being much more focused on the public with some of their messaging as well. So that's really part of the change. It's about helping the public understand the benefit it's brought, but helping the sector that deliver that infrastructure to be much more aware that they need to have a good public face and be able to communicate well with the public.
So doing it with people rather than to them?
Very much so. And it's a lot of organisations that we work with are heavily involved in community engagement and stakeholder awareness to make sure that the public ultimately understand that this very short-term pain will result in long-term benefit for Northern Ireland.
Well, one of the things that one of the elements of the year of infrastructure, which is really interesting, is the whole website and the way that you can go onto it and look at the various different aspects of infrastructure. And I've got to say, one of the most impressive bits of it is about sewage and the big Belfast sewage works, Ronan, that went on under the streets. I mean, that was one of your really massive infrastructure operations. What are your other infrastructure priorities, given that you're a really big player in this in Northern Ireland Water?
Well, you're right, Wendy. I mean, if you take what we do, the Belfast Sewers and Tunnel Programme has been a huge initiative, and we're still investing. So right outside today, before we were coming in, we could see Northern Ireland Water and contractors, civil engineers, working and, you know, continue to invest. I think we're investing about £5 million currently in some of the schemes in Belfast City right now. So that's going to help the cityscape. It's going to help the people living in the city. It's going to help people attracting jobs and investment into the city. It's as Richard says, it's positive, it's a good thing. Communities will thrive on the back of what we do. We do water and wastewater, so we do both sides of that. And if I think of some of the bigger things we're looking at the minute, we're right across the scale. I suppose we look at this as we provide the water upon which we all rely on to thrive. And if we can help communities thrive here in Northern Ireland, if we can take a role about health, importantly, so clean 21st century sanitation, and all the equipment and kit properly operated to keep the environment clean. If we can keep health at the agenda, so clean, safe drinking water and that sanitation. And if we can then invest so that the economy can continue to grow, because if the economy is growing and wants to grow immediately, if we're attracting FDI into Northern Ireland, we have to have the infrastructure available right now to build. So we need to keep building and improving and driving on with our infrastructure programme right
across
Northern
Ireland. Keep ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Dawson, one of your specialities is energy, and I suppose it's one of the Well, it used to not be visible. It's more visible now because we have a lot of windmills and so on around the place, solar as well. And without energy, not too much works really. So what's the state of play in terms of the energy infrastructure in Northern Ireland, or maybe to put it another way, on this island?
Well, I suppose, you know, picking up on Ronan's point, if NI water is about keeping clean water for all of us, you know, energy is about keeping the lights on. So it's a fundamental importance to everything, to our businesses and to our homes. It's a difficult time for the market. There's a lot of uncertainty, and there's a lot of uncertainty off the back of the things which are causing us all uncertainty. So the lack of an executive. So the last strategic energy framework was published in 2010 by Stormont, which covered a 10-year period to 2020. Very comprehensive document. It has played a significant part in terms of leading to some of the positive changes that have been made in terms of the energy mix and energy supply in the island of Ireland. But we don't have anything beyond that. So,
It's not very far away, 2020.
It's a year and a half. I mean, to say we should be planning now for a post-2020 landscape is leaving it too late. But that's where we are now. So there's an uncertainty around that. I mean, you've the likes of the CBI, who've recently published their energy priorities around security, clarity on Brexit, affordable energy for consumers. NYREG, who are the renewable industry group, the trade organisation, have set out their strategy paper. And we really need someone to take the step to fill the vacuum and to actually give a basis to go forward.
Now, Gareth, you've joined us today literally from, and probably on, the A6 coming down from there. Graham Farron's joint venture there, it's a massive project. It's worth getting the bus to Derry just to get a high level look at it. It really is such a huge scheme. How's it going?
Well, any progress on site is going well at the minute. We're certainly benefiting at the minute from the spell of good weather we've had over the last 2 months. It represents, it's a massive flagship project for both Graham Farrans as a joint venture, and it represents $160 million investment by the Department for Infrastructure. Along that, involved in the project is almost approximately 15 kilometres of dual carriageway, which will help improve the journey time between Randallstown at the end of the M22 and Castle Dawson roundabout. There's over 20 structures involved in the project, so that ranges from your pedestrian footbridges, grade separated junctions, over bridges and farm accommodation bridges. So it's a very complex project to deliver. We're making good progress on site, and we hope to have the first part of it with traffic on the road approximately this time next year, between the section between Randallstown and Toome.
Terrific. Well, it's interesting. Richard was talking about social media and the way that, you know, that people talk now and exchange information and so on. And I've been watching on Twitter various people like the Freight Transport Association and so on, you know, pictures of those really big bridges, those huge structures that you've been hoisting across the carriageways. And for anyone who has spent years driving up and down that road to the maiden city, it's been a total nightmare. But seeing that, really, it gives you hope, doesn't it? How does it feel to you?
Yeah, well, when you're in the middle of it every day, yes, sometimes you take some of it for granted that this is your day-to-day job for delivering this. But there is certainly, it's a large-scale infrastructure project. That's what we're about in terms of delivering. We try to make it look as seamless as possible. You mentioned social media. We do spend a lot of time in making sure the public are informed of what we are doing in terms of some of the disruption it's caused in terms of traffic management, in terms of road closures that you need to be able to lift your large beams into place across live carriageways. So we hopefully let the public understand for this short-term pain there's long-term benefits. You know, reasonably up there, we hope it will reduce journey time by up to a quarter along that section of the road. And it will certainly help connect the two major cities in Northern Ireland.
Happy days. I mean, I suppose, Richard, you know, you could say that this is just a 15-kilometre, 9-mile stretch of dual carriageway. It's not even a motorway. Why are we getting so excited about it?
Well, it's ultimately to try and make Northern Ireland a more prosperous place. And You know, it's important to connect our urban centres. It's also important that we invest in our urban centres as well and make those better places to move around. TransLink, a couple of weeks ago, led a road share initiative which showed that on Oxford Street in Belfast, to showcase the new Glider bus system which is coming into place in September, the waste of space that cars are within our cities. So whilst we still need to use cars, especially in a rural economy like ours, to move in between urban centres, we shouldn't really be using our cars in and around cities because they waste so much space. And it's not just about cars, it's about our health, quality of life. We're leading a more sedentary lifestyle, so we need to get more active. But also in terms of the pollution that's caused, it's killing us. So diesel cars need to move out of our cities, and we need to think more strategically about the way we move around within those urban spaces.
Now, you came here today on your bike. Another big element of this year of infrastructure has been around greenways and bike spaces and so on. Now, I think most cyclists, of whom I am not one, I would have to say, but most cyclists would say that they don't get a fair deal and that there aren't enough safe spaces for them mm-hmm. to commute to work and so on. But what about that whole element of the year of infrastructure?
If you talk to Sustrans, who are promoting cycling and public transport, they would say that from their research, it shows that for those who don't yet cycle to commute, the big barrier is not health issues or anything to do with money. It's all about the infrastructure. So if you provide cycling infrastructure which is safe, then people will cycle. And we've seen that in other cities around the world. I was in London recently, in Westminster, and they've given over a lane of traffic now to a dedicated cycle lane.
Mind you, if you talk to anyone who lives in London and has a car,
yeah, that's true,
and they're not thrilled about it.
No, I wouldn't imagine so.
And that will be the case here if it happens here.
But that's where government needs to take strategic decisions, because they know it's ultimately good for the economy and for our society as a whole. We have that in around Northern Ireland. We've got greenway networks. So whilst that segregated cycle lane might not be right beside the road, although you can use a bus lane to cycle, there are greenways which are around Northern Ireland, and there's a plan through the Department for Infrastructure for 1,000 kilometres of greenway across Northern Ireland, which it is costed at around 150 million. So Gareth referred to the A6 15 kilometre stretch is 160. York Street Interchange is likely to be around the 160, 170 million price range. 1,000 kilometres of greenway across Northern Ireland is of the same quantum. So that really needs to be considered, because it would be a great boost for the rural economy and for tourism as well. We've seen good examples of that, especially in the Republic of Ireland as well.
What about money, while we're on the point? Ronan, you were talking about some of the huge schemes that Northern Ireland Water has been involved in, continues to be involved in, and presumably will need to be in the future. They take a lot of money to carry out, don't they? And the work is sometimes very difficult. It takes huge structures and enormous tunnel boring machines and what have you. What would it take for Northern Ireland Water to attain the degree of investment that it believes is required?
Well, we're looking at that right now. We're beginning to work on our next price control plan and aligned with our strategy. And this year, if I just give some facts and figures, so this year we will invest about £162 million in our infrastructure here in Northern Ireland. When we look across the 6 years price control period that we're currently in up to the end of 2021, the department and the funding that we were able to be allocated to that was approximately £990 million for that six-year period. It sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but half of that money is used just to maintain the £2 billion worth of infrastructure we already have in the ground. On top of that, we need to build new infrastructure for capacity and growth in Northern Ireland and to add quality and environmental standards to the new levels that we're constantly being asked to go to, which will benefit Northern Ireland ultimately. But if you look at against that 990 that we were granted by the department for the investment programme for PC15, we probably estimate that we could usefully invest in the same period £1.9 billion. So, you know, Northern Ireland wants a world-class water wastewater infrastructure. It wants us to provide a world-class service, and that's our ambition. And Northern Ireland, I think, deserves that. In order to do that, you're absolutely right, that takes investment money. It takes money to run it every day. And we work very well with our department. But, you know, we have to compete for all of the other things that everybody else wants within the public sector, given that our funding is a public sector funding model. You know, we're competing against and with schools and hospitals and potholes and roads and all that goes with it. So in Northern Ireland, water has to convince and persuade and fight very hard for its money. And I think one of the benefits of this year of infrastructure is that it's helping us to get the message out about what we do. You know, the network we have, most of our network is quite invisible, it's under the ground. But you know, the year of infrastructure, we're working closely with Richard and his team to get those messages out and to really sort of lift that message to the public and people here in Northern Ireland. Says, this is a vital 24/7 everyday service right across every home and business and hospital and school in Northern Ireland. So we would always be looking for additional money available to invest.
But then so is everybody in infrastructure. Else.
And that's the difficulty because the trouble, everybody needs it? More money, whether it's health and education and others. We have to keep pushing that message because what we do every day, everybody in Northern Ireland uses it, whether it's in school, at home or in an industry. It's used right across the province every day of every year.
I think it comes back to a phrase of you get what you pay for. And in Northern Ireland, our total outgoings in terms of a household sense for rates in Northern Ireland is half of what they pay in Wales. Now, there is a water charge in Wales, which goes into a mutual water company, which is not a private company. It's a government company. But what they do there is they're investing, and it's really up to the households to pay more. So we really shouldn't be surprised that we're struggling to invest in our water and wastewater network. But ultimately, it comes down to what Ronan referred to earlier. So there's a fascination, particularly around Belfast, about a crane survey. So 27 cranes in the sky, 20 whatever, how many cranes in the sky. But actually, what we need to realise is it's the drains below. It's not the cranes above, but the drains below that will only allow cranes to go above. And there's a city deal which Belfast City Council is working on with a number of other council areas around the east of the province, and to try and fund in particular the Living with Water programme, which is a big investment programme in Belfast, which is the biggest risk for our city in terms of how we want to develop in the future. But ultimately we need to find a sustainable funding stream for Northern Ireland Water.
Dawson, I mean, that sounds very much as if we need to start paying for some things. And given what you were talking about around energy, where there isn't a plan beyond 2020, you know, if we stay where we are as regards the lack of politicians at Stormont, how difficult does it make funding all of the kinds of things we're talking about today?
Well, I think it makes it hugely difficult. I mean, listening to Richard and Ronan, you know, and they're talking about having to, you know, make their case. But who are they making their case to? There's a hearts and minds piece with the public. But in terms of decision makers, at this point in time, we have this vacuum. I mean, if we, you know, on the cost point, if we look at renewables, I think renewables in Northern Ireland, we don't celebrate our success in that. When the strategic energy framework came out in 2010, everybody gasped when we said 40% of our energy from renewable sources by 2020. It was a huge ask. We're on track. And that's something we don't celebrate a lot. And when we think about renewable energy in Northern Ireland, as you mentioned at the beginning of the programme, we think about wind farms. And that's a huge part of it. But there's also solar and biomass and other emerging technologies. Now, against that, there's the fact that I recently read the number of planning applications for renewable energy projects this year is the lowest that it's been since 2003-04. And the reason is there's no subsidies anymore. Renewable obligation certificates, the ROCs, have come to an end. And these projects now have to stand on their own feet. And I appreciate this attention. Who's ultimately paying for these things? It's the consumers. But the point is, by paying more, we're securing cleaner energy. We're securing a security of supply without reliance on energy coming from elsewhere. And you have to rely on somebody like the utility regulator to take those costs into account. But ultimately, I can't think, I couldn't put any better than Richard. You get what you pay for. And, you know, renewables in Northern Ireland is a huge success story. We're at the envy of a lot of regions elsewhere. But that's because we've made an investment and we've got to continue doing that.
Just to back that up, we just recently commissioned and built and is now operating a solar farm just up on the northeast corner of Loch Ness, right next door to one of our biggest water treatment works. And again, we worked with local civil engineers, did a fantastic project, commissioned and built in time and on budget, backed with money from our department, which will provide about 30% of the energy for that water plant every day. And that's a real showcase of a great investment and government working closely with us. The other thing I pick up is just, I was looking at the the Economy 2030 document, which is Northern Ireland's sort of industrial strategy going forward. And there's some great ambitious targets in this plan, Wendy. So by 2030, the document says, we will have put Northern Ireland in the top three most competitive small advanced economies in the world. Now, to do that, that's going to take investment in 21st century in infrastructure, you know, innovation, and world-class standards of innovation to run world-class services if we're to achieve that kind of ambition here in Northern Ireland. So that's the kind of ambition that Northern Ireland Water wants to drive into its programme of work. And we want to see that programme funded so that Northern Ireland can achieve those kinds of ambitions.
You're listening to Inside Business, by the way, with me, Wendy Austin. We're halfway through the 2018 year of infrastructure, and that's what we're talking about today. Richard Kirk's Regional Director with the Institution of Civil Engineers. Dawson McConkie specialises in energy and urban planning at law firm Carson McDowell. Ronan Larkins, Director of Finance and Regulation with Northern Ireland Water. And Gareth McLaverty is from Graham, one of our leading construction firms. Gareth, just listening to what Ronan was saying there about that the targets and the strategy for 2030. I mean, we're not going to be the leading anything if we don't have young people brought along, given the skills and the ability to do the kinds of things that all of you are doing. And that's, I must say, one of the impressive things about the scheme that you're involved in on the A6. It was the same with the Cumber Greenway and so on as well. This whole drive to bring apprentices through, to get young people involved, to let them see the excitement and what construction and infrastructure actually do for people.
Yeah, well, you're quite right, Wendy. The whole bit about the passion for construction is about getting the next generation involved in it. There's great opportunities out there, but it's the young people today are going to deliver the plans for 2030, 2040 and 2050. And we do a lot of work with Richard and his team in terms of bringing apprentices in through the Work Plus scheme that the IC are involved in. We're also committed to delivering 2,730 weeks through bi-social clauses up on the A6. And that involves new entrants to construction industry, long-term unemployed. It's not just engineers it takes to build these jobs. We need right from plant operators, general labourers, communications people, PR, HR, accountant. It takes a wide team to deliver major infrastructure projects. And we need the skills coming through. There's a lot of investment into it, but we have to encourage the next generation to want to get involved in the construction industry to deliver our infrastructure.
And when the young people come along and they see what you're doing there, particularly in the last few weeks when you haven't been clobbered the eyeballs because it was very, very wet there over the winter. But when they see it, do you see them get excited at the prospect? You know, are they saying, gosh, you know, this is terrific, I would really like to be involved?
As I say to try and tell everybody, the one great thing about building stuff out in the environment out there is that you leave a legacy behind you. You can drive along this road and say, we were involved in those bridges, that infrastructure. The people in the area get to know you. There's a lot of jobs that you can't do that, where, for want of a better phrase, we push paper about the table and nobody really gets to see your work. The one thing is we need to celebrate infrastructure and civil engineering, and through the work that Richard and his team done is really try and help people understand what it is. Unfortunately, as Ronan says, a lot of our work is buried in the ground. You know, our main infrastructure in terms of pipelines and to make up a road, the only thing that people actually see is actually the blacktop surfaces and the people drive on. There's actually a lot of a makeup in terms of piling, ground improvements, stone, putting clay in and layers. And it's all that stuff that we need to get to the fore and make sure everybody understands it and celebrate it.
So my son still drives past a certain shop on Boucher Road and claims the credit for having overseen pouring the concrete when he was on a summer job there one year. But if we look at that whole infrastructure side of things, I mean, let's stick with the stuff above ground just for a moment. Dawson, it has to be properly planned, doesn't it? And that's something that you specialise in as well, urban planning. I mean, are we getting better at providing a planning which provides places that people want to live in? I mean, that's the important part of it, isn't it?
Yes. I think we are, but I think we're probably getting better slowly. And, you know, a lot of this is about connectivity. It's about you know, the left hand knowing what the right hand's doing. Sometimes that still isn't the case. I mean, you know, if we root it in the energy market again, you know, the big piece of infrastructure that's needed and has been identified as being necessary for a long, long time is obviously the North-South Interconnector, you know, which is a £200 million scheme, which will involve 85 miles of overhead cables linking the NI and the ROI markets. And that's a vital piece of kit. And
particularly with the announcement around Kilroot and Ballylumford and so on.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we're moving to a situation where, you know, beforehand, if you're a capacity provider, you were paid when you generated electricity. Now we're moving to a situation where you have to first bid to get at the table, and then you'll be paid in lieu of having said, I'll provide electricity when it's needed. So the first round of the capacity auction under the ISIM was in December, and the big news, you're quite right, was that the gas and coal generators at Kilroot and Ballylumford weren't successful. And that's left to a lot of question marks. I mean, it's a question mark for those areas, you know, in terms of employment. And obviously, there are plans to bring the closures of those generators forward, which is unfortunate. It's a big question mark about the security of supply. You know, it is about keeping the lights on, to repeat myself. And, you know, a lot of people are asking questions, is there enough out there to do that? Now, Sony are comfortable that there is, and that with the good fuel mix that we have, we should be fine. But something like the interconnector, which will secure supply, which will allow more renewable energy projects to feed into the grid, and will ultimately, with the capacity auctions, push prices down for consumers have to be welcome. But it's taken forever to get where we are, which is still not very far. Mm. And I'd love to get to the point where we see a Graham Farron going on site and actually starting to put pylons up.
And what about local councils, Richard? Because I was just reading through David Stirling's document, the outcomes one and so on, that he brought out just a few months ago. And one of the things that he says in that is that the local councils have already all linked their community plans to the outcomes that he talks about, connecting people and opportunities through infrastructure. What role do they have to play in all of this, given that they're the only politicians who are working at the moment?
Well, they've got more powers since the reform of public administration, and they now have economic development powers, which means that they can take forward infrastructure projects, and we've seen some councils doing that. So that's to be welcomed. The local development plans that we have seen do refer to the outcomes-based accountability that's in the programme, the draft programme for government. So it's good to see that the government at all levels is being joined up, but ultimately it'll be we will need politicians at Stormont to take decisions on the regionally significant ones, the likes of the North-South Interconnector. And the problem with the draft programme for government is that we're moving to a destination and we're not quite sure where it is. And we've got a map and we're not quite sure what it is either. So we have a draft map going to a draft destination. I'm going on my holidays next week. I'm so glad that I know exactly where I'm going and I know how I'm going to get there. I wouldn't want to go if I had a draft map and I didn't know where I was going to. At the minute, that's the problem. We don't have an agreed programme for government. Yes, it does set out some of the key aspirations, but we don't have politicians there. We live in a democracy. We need politicians. You can never take the politics out of infrastructure, nor should you. They play a vital role in the approval process, but we must make sure that they come back. Otherwise, Northern Ireland will continue to suffer.
Absolutely.
Is there a risk in it?
I think there's a risk. There is a risk because, you know, we know we've got limited resources. We know we've got competing priorities, and they're all good priorities. Rona mentioned, you know, hospitals and schools are competing alongside the likes of water infrastructure. So there's good, you know, it's not that there's something there that's wasting money. But somebody needs to set the priority, and somebody needs to be able to say, well, look, this isn't necessarily going to be the popular decision, but for the long term good, this is what we need to do. And at the moment, particularly with uncertainty around the ability of civil servants to make decisions, it's effectively like a moratorium has been made on terms of setting our priorities and pushing on with infrastructure projects. That isn't good for those of us who live here. It can't be good, and there's no end date in sight as to when that's going to change, and that's hugely frustrating.
And just very briefly, does it mean that we're not just staying still, but actually falling back?
I think that's a very fair point, because so much of what Ronan, for example, said is spending money to keep what's already there up to standard and operating before you even start about improving things. So you're absolutely right. If you're not moving forward, you're effectively standing still and going backwards on a travelator.
going to have to stop there, unfortunately. Stop the travel later. That's it for Inside Business this week. My thanks to Gareth McLaverty, Ronan Larkin, to Richard Kirk and Dawson McConkie. The programme was produced by Niall Blaney. I'm Wendy Austin. You can stay in touch on Twitter at WendyTalksBiz with two Zs. Inside Business, Sundays at 1:30 and Mondays at 6:30. And there's a podcast whenever it suits you. So don't miss it. That was the Inside Business podcast. I'm Wendy Austin. Stay in touch with the programme. You can email us at insidebusiness@bbc.co.uk or get in touch on Twitter. Follow us at Wendy Talks Biz. Remember to join us again next week, 1:30 on Sunday, 6:30 p.m. on Monday.